What does science have to say about social justice? Not much, you might think, since the objective standards of scientific inquiry would seem to have little to do with the social goals of a progressive society. But that would be short-sighted, according to Joseph L. Graves, Jr., the author of the new book, A Voice in the Wilderness, a pioneering biologist explains how evolution can help us solve our biggest problems. Joseph has written several books, teaches biology at North Carolina A&T State University, and is the first African-American to receive a PhD in evolutionary biology. Here he is to share five big ideas from his book.
Insight 1, Black Darwin. This is the story of how I overcame the many disadvantages, racial subordination, poverty, imposter syndrome, in my way to becoming a scientist. I was the most unlikely sort of person to enter this career. There was nothing in the situation of my birth that predicted that I would become the first African American to earn a PhD in evolutionary biology. My parents grew up under violent Jim Crow, with little access to education. They both moved to New Jersey after World War II. My mother worked as a domestic during the day and as a factory worker at night. My father worked in the local lumberyard. In 1960, I entered a school system whose goals did not include my ever becoming a scientist. At that time, education was tracked by race and class. Yet my intellectual abilities during elementary school surprised my teachers. Things changed for me when I took up playing chess as a hobby. By junior high school, I was school champion. My first year of high school, I decided to quit the football team and play on our competitive chess team. This also precipitated a change between my hanging out with the black kids of my neighborhood and spending more time with the wealthy, college-bound white kids from the north side of town. My strength in mathematics and science gained me a scholarship to attend Oberlin College. My time at Oberlin was a double-edged sword. Its liberal arts environment provided me with the critical thinking tools that served as the foundation for my eventual success as a scientist. However, it is also the place where I really began to doubt my abilities to become a scientist. This occurred mainly due to my alienation stemming from the fact that I was one of the few black and working class science students on campus. I was becoming lost in the wilderness. There was no trail for me to follow, no black scientist role models on campus. I internalized all my failures, and deep down inside, I just didn't feel like I belonged. I was suffering from what we call today imposter syndrome. Part one of the book tells the story of how I eventually faced down imposter syndrome and became Black Darwin. Insight 2. Nothing in biology makes sense save in the light of evolution. Evolution is a core unifying principle of modern biology. Obviously, it wasn't always so. Biology in the Western world began as an adjunct to Christian ideas of special creation. In this worldview, the omnipotence and beneficence of God could be directly observed in the works of creation. The idea was called natural theology. However, as the natural theologians began to study nature more closely, phenomena were being uncovered that just didn't fit with the narrative of creation in Genesis. Chief amongst these were fossils of living things that could no longer be found on this planet. The first evolutionary scientists were Christians. The 18th century Catholic Jean-Baptiste Lamarck recognized that animals had changed their form over the course of the fossil record. By the mid-19th century, the question of how species formed was the most significant scientific issue of the time. Charles Darwin began to make sense of this question with the publication of On the Origin of Species in 1859. A few years later, the Austrian monk, Gregor Mendel, would establish the basic rules of heredity. In the early 20th century, Darwin's natural selection and Mendel's mechanisms of heredity would be unified in what was called the Neo-Darwinian synthesis. The synthesis allowed biologists to solve some of the greatest problems in biology. In Voice, I acquaint the reader with how evolution helps us understand why and how we age, human biological variation, and how it isn't racial, parasitism, sex and gender, epidemics and pandemics, race and intelligence, computational methods to solve difficult engineering problems, and how evolution helps us bring about social justice. I also describe for the reader my place in the history of evolutionary science. I give them an example of my connection to some of the greatest minds in history, J.B.S. Haldane, John Maynard Smith, Nobel Prize winner Thomas Hunt Morgan, Thaddeus Dobzhansky, Richard Lewontin, Brian Charlesworth, and Michael Rose. Finally, I talk about the importance of my collaborations with colleagues such as Alan Goodman, Jane Manshine, Larry Muller, Charmaine Royal, and my genomics research group at North Carolina A&T. Insight 3. Accepting evolution does not mean you cannot believe in the divine. Evolution is a unifying idea of modern biological science. Yet, the majority of Americans do not accept it as a fact of nature. This is related to the particular religious history of the United States, not to religion itself. For example, predominantly Christian nations such as Denmark, Sweden, and the United Kingdom accept evolution at rates greater than 65% of all adults. The United States, on the other hand, has the second lowest acceptance rate for evolution in the industrialized world. Only Turkey is lower. This is because in the latter portion of the 19th century, American Protestants were deeply influenced by biblical literalism. This is the idea that everything in the Bible was literally true, including not just spiritual issues, but also scientific, historical, and geographical facts. As a practicing Christian, I hold to the higher criticism view of Scripture. Thus, I do not think that the Bible is infallible in its scientific, historical, and geographical claims. The Bible is a text that can be read as literature, and our understanding of it in this context has evolved over time. Seeing the Bible in this way, there is no reason to reject the methods of science, which are the most reliable way to understand how natural systems work. The Bible is not, and was never meant to be, a textbook of science. The false debate between religion and science has been harmful to both. Throughout my career, I have been called upon to diffuse the contention between bad religion and bad science. The former relies on the special creation of living things, and the latter claims that to accept science, you must deny the existence of God. This false divide has been particularly harmful to teaching science effectively to Black and Brown students, who often come from deeply religious and spiritual communities. The reason why I've been effective in teaching evolution to these students is that I do not ask them to turn their back on their communities to pursue a career in science, and in that way, they can enter into the opportunity to help their people through scientific research. Insight 4. Rejecting America's biggest lie. James Baldwin once said, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." In Voice in the Wilderness, I invite the reader to face one of America's greatest lies, the link between race and intelligence. Specifically, I address several falsehoods associated with this myth, including the lack of connection between biological variation and social conceptions of race, the false link between socially defined race and intelligence, and the false link between intelligence and social structure. My crusade to dismantle these falsehoods began when I was an assistant professor. It resulted from a phone call by a colleague imploring me to address the exaggerated claims made by Richard Herrnstein and Charles R. Murray's book, The Bell Curve, published in 1994. I was one of the first scholars to publish a paper demonstrating the fundamental fallacies within this work, including its reliance on social definitions of race, as opposed to human biological variation, its use of discredited sources to support its claims, and its incorrect statistical methods. Little did I know that once I ventured down this road, the battle against scientific racism would dominate the rest of my career. Eventually, I would write a book telling the history of the race idea in the Western world. I describe in Voice the conditions that led me to take on that project and its connection to a significant personal tragedy, the death of my brother Warren. The Emperor's New Clothes, first published in 2001, is considered by many as my most important scholarly contribution, and it was dedicated to my brother. Soon afterwards, I published The Race Myth in 2004, a work that I hoped would be my last book about race. Yet despite my naive and best hopes, in 2016, I found myself back at work against scientific racism. This was prompted by a direct discussion with Charles R. Murray about the genetics of intelligence at a program held at Williams College. With the nation's racial climate shifting dramatically to the right, I discussed the importance of my collaboration to write Racism Not Race with my colleague Alan Goodman. That book came out in December of 2021. Insight 5. The Evolutionary Science of Social Justice. We were all born in various systems of social injustice. People vary in how they react to this fact. Some simply refuse to see it, Others resign themselves to simply accept this and survive the best they can. Still fewer choose to try and change this. I was one who chose to devote their life to fighting for justice. This is a core theme that runs throughout Voice, and one that I amplify in Chapter 14, The Evolutionary Science of Social Justice. If one asks the average person on the street about evolution and social justice, they are likely to recall ideas such as eugenics or social Darwinism. These were movements that falsely utilized principles of genetics and evolution to justify social hierarchy. It was the sociologist Herbert Spencer who coined the term survival of the fittest, not Charles Darwin. In Voice, I discuss how the evolutionary principles that shape human societies do not necessarily result in rigid hierarchies. Furthermore, I explain why such hierarchies in the modern world are now an evolutionary mismatch. A mismatch occurs when a trait that was formerly adaptive in an ancestral environment is now harmful in the present environment. I outline for the reader the great danger to the future of our species that results from maintaining systems that allow social injustice to govern our world. Finally, I suggest the benefits that will accrue should we choose to do the work of envisioning and enacting systems that benefit us all, instead of benefiting just a few.
Thank you, Joseph. That was Joseph L. Graves, Jr. with five big ideas from A Voice in the Wilderness. A pioneering biologist explains how evolution can help us solve our biggest problems. If you're interested in the overlap between science and social issues, check out our book bite for The Disordered Cosmos, A Journey into Dark Matter, Space-Time, and Dreams Deferred. I'm Rufus Griscom. Have a great day.